It's another January, which means we are here in chilly Geneva for the SIHH, the Salon International de Haute Horlogerie. Pardon my terrible French, but it's really the first big event of the year on the watch calendar. It's where brands from A. Lange & Söhne to Cartier to JLC to Panerai and then smaller brands like the Grönfelds and MB&F show the watches that they're going to be presenting to their retailers and their customers for the rest of the year. It's a chance to take stock of where the watch industry is and what customers are looking for. And this year's a little bit special, too. The fairs, Baselworld, and SIHH are both kind of in flux, and this year's SIHH is the last one for Richard Mille and for Audemars Piguet, who showed up with a pretty huge release for them, the Code 1159, which we're going to get into a little bit in this episode. But it felt important for us to do something different, something a little extra this year. So in addition to all the great coverage on the web and all the stuff we're going to be producing real time on social media, we thought it would be fun to do some daily podcast updates. So you're going to be getting a kind of mini episode today, the one you're listening to right now, and then another episode on Tuesday and a final episode on Wednesday where we'll wrap up the show. It's going to be different team members every day. We're going to try to provide you some different perspectives and give you a little bit of an inside look at the first important show of the watch calendar. I'm your host, Stephen Pulverant, and this is a special SIHH 2019 edition of Hodinkee Radio. All right, day one. Day one of SIHH 2019.
Day one indeed.
There we go. We got John Buse, who just arrived in Switzerland this morning.
Correct, and very happy to be here.
We've got Mr. James Stacey, who is filming us while we talk. You'll probably have seen the content he's making right now before you hear this.
Aggressive contenting.
Always be contenting.
And then we've got Mr. Ben Clymer here, too.
Hello, everybody.
And Jack's back at the hotel making some actual content while we do this.
Is Jack actually working back at the hotel? That's the question.
I think so.
Yeah, but we're making content, too. So
we're all working.
We're all working, yeah. Okay. Working hard.
Cool.
So we are about to wrap up day one of SIHH, which, if you've never been to a watch trade show, they're kind of weird events, right, Ben?
Yeah, I would say this is pretty weird. I mean, just looking at the room right now, like, it's weird.
Yeah, we're in like a back, like, business center.
The spiral room, right?
The spiral room, yeah. At the...
right.
En français,
yeah. At the Pal Expo in Geneva. Uh-huh.
AKA the convention hall next to the airport.
Correct,
right?
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
The very glamorous convention hall next to the airport.
They do make it look nice, though.
They do make it look nice, yeah. A little background on SIHH. So there are two basic trade shows of the year. There's SIHH in January and Baselworld in March. That'll change next year when they both end up in April, I guess. But basically every January for the last number of years, the FHH has put on this show where the watch brands owned by Richemont as well as a handful of others show off their new wares and kick off the year. And we basically come here and we go visit all the brands. And we see all the watches that you're going to be able to buy and see over the next 12 months, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the long and short of it, for sure. And, you know, to give a little bit more context, the Baselworld encompasses everybody from Patek Philippe to, at the time, or a few years ago, we had everything from Patek to Paris Hilton. She had her own watch line for a little while.
Oh, sweet.
I remember that. So Patek
sweet.
To Paris.
Did we cover that?
Yeah, Jack did.
Okay, sweet.
This was pre-Jack. So, I mean, Basel is all of that, plus basically anybody can go, whoever wants to. The SIHH is far more exclusive.
Yeah.
The brands have to be approved by the FHH, which is the foundation of horology. And so this is a much fancier affair. It is one of a few days in the year that I'm seen wearing a tie. We actually have a resident Canadian wearing a tie, which, again, I don't even know if Canada had ties.
Yeah, me neither.
My throat sounds different. Like, my voice is different. It's because I'm wearing a tie.
So this is a pretty elevated. I mean, it is the most elevated trade show that I'm aware of in the world.
There's like champagne flutes and fancy stuff happening all over the place.
Correct.
Yeah. I watched all of my colleagues all wearing ties eat sushi for lunch and almost order beers, I guess. Maybe there were beers.
Well, there's one person here not wearing a tie, and that's because he's wearing a turtleneck.
That's true.
With a suit.
That's
and that
also
is
true.
One SJPZ.
Yeah. Personal brand, right? It's good to have a thing.
It is your personal brand, for sure.
It's mostly so I can show up to SIHH basically wearing pajamas. But we're here for 3 days checking out the show. It'll take us that long. There's now 30-something brands. Used to be like 12. And now it's a little more busy. But to kick things off, today we visited Audemars Piguet, Langenzona, Cartier, Vacheron Constantin, Hermès,
IWC.
IWC, JLC.
Yeah.
We got through a lot of big brands today. So I thought it'd be good to kind of kick things off. You know, it's First Impressions Day. What was everybody's favorite thing they saw today? Maybe let's start. I'm going to put James on the spot first here. Dude. What's the coolest thing you saw today?
I thought the Ricard Lange. I could see the watch in my head, and then I totally blanked. I thought the Ricard Lange was incredible.
That's the jumping seconds.
Yeah,
that watch black is dial. Really, really nice.
With the black dial, it's still just under 40 millimeters. Nothing wears. Like, that's such a perfect size, and it feels like kind of modern and classic at the same time, and it's super legible, and then just has a little bit of extra color with the red.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Lange does everything that they do. They execute at such a high level, but that watch is a special charm even within kind of their general vibe.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, that's a watch that in its two other colorways looks, you know, I wouldn't say fuddy-duddy, but it definitely looks a little old school, whereas this new one is much more wearable, and like there's almost something a little aggressive about it. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I think the Langenzone Perpetual Calendar Tourbillon, Datagraph Perpetual Calendar Tourbillon, in white gold case with kind of rosy pinky dial is really attractive. Obviously, great colorway. It's not as salmon, you know, which is a hot term, as people would tend to think based on the press photos. It's the best looking movement in the world, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I loved it when it came out in platinum with a black on black dial. This is a little bit more casual. I don't wear a lot of black dials. I don't wear a lot of black, period. So this works with my aesthetic really well. It's still a big boy. It's beefy. But in terms of watchmaking, that's a pretty fucking great watch. To stick with the salmon theme, the 15202 BC,
yeah.
Ben Clymer, just saying. That is a white gold salmon dial 15202, which how can you argue with?
You basically need one now, right?
I might get one.
Yeah.
Actually, I love it. I'm a big fan of the jumbo. I've got a perpetual with a salmon dial. That one, you know, there's nothing revolutionary about it in any way. It's just it's a cool thing, and that's kind of all it takes sometimes. IWC, killer year. I think IWC is one of the strongest collections here. Just great commercial stuff. They do a bronze chronograph for $6,500 or something like that.
With an in-house movement.
Yeah. In-house movement. But, you know, I mean, it is in-house for sure. I won't say that it's not. But, you know, everything, you know, in-house doesn't mean super great.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really great consumer grade movement for sure. You know, this is not comparable to Daytona movement
or anything like that.
But it is in house. Vacheron, I mean, it's been a pretty solid year around town. You know, it's not obviously 1159 is a big discussion point. Cartier did some great, really wonderful Cartier things, you know, stuff that is just like that's just them, you know. So overall some good stuff. But yeah, I mean the 15202, like I might actually buy.
Sweet. John, anything you're like itching to put a deposit down on?
Well, I actually just left like the group presentation for AP, and I have to agree with Ben on that white gold jumbo. That's just with the salmon dial. That's sweet. It looks, I think, better in person than any of the pictures even that I've seen. So definitely that. Also, the Gyro Tourbillon at Jaeger is just fucking bonkers. And that's like,
I love the idea of you waltzing into the office wearing a Gyro Tourbillon.
Yeah. I mean, I
love that.
I don't know if I could wear that. I'd try it, but, you know, I think that it's a watch like that is just a reminder that like, JLC can like pretty much do anything.
They can.
And I think sometimes when you look at, you know, the sports watches that they make and some of like the simpler dress watches like Reversos, you can at times lose sight of that.
Yeah.
So that was definitely a big reminder for me of what they are capable of doing. And then I haven't quite had a chance to see a lot of the stuff that you guys saw earlier because I only got in around noon.
Because you got off a plane and came to the show.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I did squeeze in a shower at the hotel. But
we all appreciate that.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that's because one of your good friends got married this week.
Exactly. Yeah. Shout out to Isaac Gruber.
There he is.
There we go.
Love you, Isaac.
Woo.
Yeah, he got married in New York on Saturday and didn't want to miss it.
And
yeah.
Steven.
Wow. I mean, not to rehash too much, but I think you guys have called out some of the big winners. The 15202, the Ricard Lange, those are both standouts for me. But I think honestly one of my favorite watches is one of the simplest watches I saw, which is the Cartier Privé Tonneau.
Oh, it's the best.
They did two versions, rose gold and platinum, and the platinum one with a silvered dial, ruby cabochon in the crown. It's like if I wore a suit more often than I do, it would be a must-have. It is so impossibly elegant. It's super thin, it's curved, so it sits amazing on the wrist. It's just It's the kind of watch only Cartier could make, and they handled every detail about as well as they possibly could. It's a good reminder why, in many ways, Cartier is the best at what they do. I really love that. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, the IWC pieces, Ben, which you mentioned, we had the chance to go shoot them in Schaffhausen in December. And I've been like itching to be able to tell people about them. The new Spitfires they're unreal. I mean, you get great watches, great movements. They're really wearable. They're consumer friendly. These aren't watches that like everybody will see and enjoy on the internet and then 10 dudes will actually buy them.
Yeah.
These are watches that thousands, if not tens of thousands of people will buy over the next year.
Yeah,
and
we're going to see some of these.
Really enjoy, which is great.
Yep.
I always love it when the brands, even at a show like this that tends to be a little more elevated, when the brands put the same effort into consumer-friendly watches that they do into the high-end collector service stuff. Ben, you already mentioned it, and I think it's something we definitely want to talk about, but kind of the big news heading into the show, which broke on Saturday, is Code 1159 by Audemars Piguet. This is the new collection. It's meant to be a full collection, full complement of new movements, kind of everyday sort of watches. They're not dressy. They're not sport watches. And there's definitely mixed opinions out there. So I kind of want to, maybe somebody here can kind of rehash the state of affairs with feedback online and then get into what they think.
Well, I mean, I haven't read through, I guess, all of the comments on our site. But I would say that, they ranged from people being generally interested and supportive to really hating on those watches.
Yeah.
It's the internet. So I was really interested just to see for myself what they actually look like in person and not base any kind of judgment off of press photos, which is really all we had to go on at that point.
Yeah.
I wanted to see with my own two eyes what the watches looked like. And I will say that while some of them maybe weren't my favorite watch designs, the perpetual calendar with the aventurine dial was downright beautiful.
Ben, you had mentioned that one to me as a stand-up.
I think that's a gorgeous watch.
It's a nice watch. I mean, I think the big issue with the 1159, I think, according to most, is really the dial. I think everybody understands the need for a round case, right? I mean, 99% of the watches in the world have round cases. And so what AP did with integrating the octagonal kind of mid-case is neat, and like it makes a lot of sense. I think you can't really criticize them for the idea, for sure. I think the dial on that aventurine perpetual is stunning, but you put that dial on just about any watch and it would be stunning. It's really sure. Special, and of course you can't knock AP ever for their movements. The movements in particular in the chronograph are the best of the best. It's really difficult to talk about this and kind of like avoid the criticism because that is a big talk of the town. But as Jack said, when he saw them before everybody else. They really are much higher quality than the pictures would indicate. This is AP and they're finished like APs.
Yeah,
and that's something you can't take away from them. The design aspect of it, that's subjective. You either like it or you don't. And so it's hard to really comment on that. It's one of those things where, like, this is not, I can imagine, probably the reaction that AP was probably hoping for. I know this is a really important launch to them. I know Francois was really excited about it, and it is really different for them. And when you have such an icon, really an icon, people use the word iconic all the time, but the Royal Oak in the watch world is an icon. When so much of your business is based around this one icon, and you try to duplicate that or replicate that, you're in for it. It's not going to be an easy thing to do when one model has come to define your entire brand and then you try to do something else.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, and I think we discussed this the other day, it in some ways didn't matter what AP did. People were going to find a reason to hate this. Certain people,
yeah.
It's people want the Royal Oak from AP, and just in trying to do something different, they were kind of inviting a little bit of hatred. Whether it's warranted or not is a separate question, but
I mean, the way that I see it to some extent, and I'd love to hear what you guys think about this because you have more experience in it than me, is in some ways this is a Porsche launching an SUV.
Right.
It's, they make a product that is so heavily loved by enthusiasts that it requires a high level of explanation to a brand new buyer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Code 1159 doesn't require as much explanation.
Yep.
It's a more accessible product for theoretically a new group of people. And you look at a brand like Lamborghini with the Urus, the it's 70% conquest buyers.
Yeah.
And you got to assume maybe that's what they're going for with this code 1159 isn't to get the guy that has a few Royal Oaks to buy another watch in the same price point. It's to develop a new line. And so the fact that people who are maybe on our comments or really deep into watches don't get it right now, it's going to be a longer play than that. It took years for the Cayenne to officially save Porsche.
Yep.
And, you know, maybe that's the kind of route with something like this.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. I think that's a perfect analogy. The one thing I would say is you use the word accessible, and I think intellectually it is more accessible, but financially it's not, right?
Yeah, the beginning price point. In the range of people who were buying Royal Oaks, I guess it was my assumption.
Yes and no to me. I mean, I would disagree a little bit. Like, this begins at, what, $28,000?
Yeah.
The Royal Oak starts at $14,700, as far as I know. So it's literally double the price
of an
entry-level Royal Oak, and that's the part that I don't maybe connect with.
Yeah.
You know, I think doing one of these in steel for $12,000 or whatever, I think that, like, okay, I get it. But I think you're totally, from a design perspective, I get why they did it, of course, and this is the Cayenne. And as we know, as you just said, the Cayenne saved Porsche.
50s, and with the other, with the Macan, you're looking at 65% of their sales.
I think at least, yeah. But yeah, I definitely agree with that for sure. But the pricing,
I didn't realize the price was that much of a disparity.
From the entry level, like the 37 millimeter 14,450 or what is it, 14,500?
Yep.
The 37 millimeters, that's 14,700 retail.
That's a big jump then.
It is. Yeah. It is. And so I think, you know, to go to 28,000 is a big jump. But, you know, aesthetically, you're totally right. Like, this watch does not have to be explained to the banker that walks in that just wants a cool watch, a nice watch, you know?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, one of the big things with Code 1159 is this set of new movements. There's three new calibers. It's an in-house self-winding movement, an in-house chronograph movement, and an in-house flying tourbillon movement. And the idea was to introduce this collection as essentially everything's new. And, you know, I remember asking Francois whether these movements would make their way into other collections. And I got kind of a probably down the road. And then we saw the press kit for this year's SIHH and the new Royal Oak, the new entry-level 41-millimeter self-winding Royal Oak, uses the same movement that is in the new Code 1159 three-Hinden date watch. And I think that's a pretty clear sign that the sort of technical innovations that we're seeing, whether you eventually buy a code or whether you just want to stick to the Royal Oak, the kind of technical benefits are going to have knock-on effects that everybody can kind of enjoy. You know, I think the chronograph is probably what most people are waiting for, right?
Yeah, in the Royal Oak, for sure.
Yeah,
I mean, we've been using a Piguet movement since the earliest days, you know, so to have that really lovely new in-house chronograph in the Royal Oak would go a long way. But I think also AP had some, you know, we already mentioned the salmon dial. AP had some really great kind of like peripheral releases, such as the 38 millimeter Royal Oak.
Yeah.
Which actually didn't get to try on. I really wanted to.
The chronograph, right?
The chrono,
yeah.
That's a cool, I mean, that's a neat thing.
I agree.
Absolutely.
And it's a Piguet movement, which is a quality movement. And so I think there's a lot of stuff to keep Royal Oak people happy. You know, that ceramic tourbillon, the white gold guy. And a bunch of other crazy stuff to keep the base happy. And then we'll see what happens with 1159. And frankly, speaking to people at AP, which I imagine are telling me the truth, they claim that sales are very strong. And the other thing to note also, and this is interesting, is that all the 1159s are going to their own boutiques.
Right.
So no dealers, and granted they don't have that many anymore, no dealers will get any 1159s.
And they're making, it's 13 references, and they're making 2,000 watches total for the year. So
correct.
It's still a pretty small percentage of their overall
They
collection.
Make 40,000 watches per year.
Right.
So, you know.
It seems most of the really in-demand stuff and the interesting stuff is going to their own controlled retail network.
Makes sense. Right? I mean, we see that with other brands as well. Sure. I mean, if they know they can sell it, why not make 100% of the margin instead of just, you know, 40% of the margin?
Yeah. Kind of to segue away from Code 1159, although it may come back up in this, is... heading into the show, the watches we've talked about so far that were kind of our highlights, things like the 15202, things like the Richard Lange Jumping Seconds, these are watches that we knew we were going to like them. Like, it's no surprise that these are awesome and that these are our highlights. Have you guys seen anything today that, you know, you weren't expecting or that once you saw it in the metal kind of really, really blew you away?
But for me, the Hermes, the double moon phase, is really beautiful. And, you know, that's a story that Stephen wrote up, you wrote up last night. And the response, I was just scanning comments this morning before I got going. And the comments were overwhelmingly positive. I mean, I didn't see a single negative comment. And this is a $25,000 Hermes watch. That's pretty whimsical. You know, it's pretty emotional. And our guys just loved it. And then I saw it. It was my second appointment. I also loved it. You know, it's Jean-Francois Mojean who did the movement. Chronode is the company. Exclusive for Hermes. It is perfect for them. And Pierre-Alexis Dumas is a big space guy, big science fiction guy. And this really speaks to that. And it's a really beautiful, neat thing. I was a big fan of that one.
I think the Ed Vacheron, the overseas tourbillon,
was a
good-looking watch.
Yeah.
That blue dial was really killer. And that was one that I actually wrote up the introducing piece, and just based on the press photos, I knew that it was one that I might like, but I really would have to see it in person, and I liked it a lot.
Yeah, the overseas collection in general is one of those things that's really kind of easy to forget about when you have Nautilus and Royal Oak and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But then you see it and you realize that, like, oh, wait, like, this is actually more compelling than those and less obvious for sure. And that tourbillon in particular, that's the peripheral rotor tourbillon,
exactly.
Which is a fucking cool watch.
It's,
you know,
a great,
it really
movement,
is.
Yeah.
You get to see the entire movement without having to wind it. It's a neat thing.
So I guess the first overseas tourbillon, and also one of the very first, if
steel.
Not the first, steel tourbillons.
Yeah, I think it's the first serially produced steel tourbillon from BC.
That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that stood out for me is, you know, we'd heard that Cartier would have something in quartz, which, like, when you put those two things kind of together, I kind of stopped listening to a certain extent. And then to see it in person, you know, these new Santos models, both fairly small in size, one smaller than the other, of course, and then they have one in, like, rose gold case on a gray leather strap. And as soon as you put it on your wrist, it speaks for itself. Yes, it's still quartz. Yes, it's expensive for quartz, especially if you're investing in a gold watch that has a quartz movement, but very charming.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I actually, another watch at Hermes surprised me. I agree, the double moon looked amazing. But I also really love, they have a skeleton that I'm going to be writing up probably tonight. That's just really cool. It's got this sort of like smoked dial. The dial's translucent.
I thought it was the crystal that was smoked on that one.
Okay. Yeah. Then maybe it's the crystal then. But you get this sort of like smoky effect. You've got all the like traditional Hermes typography. You've got a really interesting open worked rotor. It's just it's a totally different take on what Hermes has been doing the last couple years. And I really enjoyed it. It's a little like cooler and edgier, I would say. It's a watch I had no idea was coming. I hadn't seen anything about it, and they pulled it out in the meeting, and I was pretty excited about it. So tomorrow, day two, we're seeing a bunch of the independents tomorrow. We'll be seeing MB&F, we'll be seeing Erwerk, we'll be seeing Resonance, and then a handful of the larger brands that we didn't see today. But I wonder, is there anything you've heard any buzz about or that you've read about somewhere that you're really looking forward to seeing tomorrow or later in the week? Maybe we'll start with James on this one.
I'd like to see, I wrote about it, you know, they're offering now a full gold bracelet in the overseas.
Mm. Yeah.
On the QP with the silver dials.
John, I saw that. It's killer.
Is it?
It is,
yeah,
awesome.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, I mean, like, full gold and that, it's thin on a gold bracelet, like, I
think
very
you
much
and I
like
see
to try
them
that on
Wednesday.
Yeah,
I think
okay.
We go back to check it out.
So you need a Risha.
You start wearing a tie.
Yeah.
You want a full gold watch.
Yeah.
What's next?
Sky's the limit.
James has been wanting a full gold watch for
a while. Yeah, I tried.
It's definitely
an,
something.
Tried on an old AP, and it kind of broke me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a winner.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
I'm pretty interested to see this new Freak X from Ulysse Nardin. It's like a $20,000 Freak. So it's significantly less expensive than when the watch.
It took all my energy to not respond. You're a $20,000 freak.
Oh my God.
Sorry.
Even Jay Pulverint, everybody. Yeah.
Oh my. How do I even respond to that?
you don't.
So yeah, I'd like to see that watch. It's a bit of a, I don't want to say watered down, but it's a bit of a toned down freak. It has a crown, it's a smaller size. So probably more wearable to a greater number of people and certainly more affordable. Yeah, I'd like to check that out.
Sweet. Ben?
Yeah, for me, you know, I haven't heard about anything from the independents that I think that I really need to go see.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the new Groenfeld self-winding watch. I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
But I kind of know what that would look like. You know, for me, I mean, thinking about it in the way that I used to when I covered the show, it was like, what do I personally care about? Like, as in, like, I want to write a check for this thing. It would be, I want to go see the 38mm AP chronograph.
Yeah.
Which I did not see today. Because that could actually be really compelling commercially. And, like, it could be a fun thing to just, like, if you don't want to wear a Daytona or you can't get a Daytona, this could be a nice option for that. And I bet the pricing will be basically what a Daytona sells for in the secondary market.
Right. That makes sense. Nice size, too, in that case.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've, I've got a couple things, I guess. I'm excited to see the new Laurent Ferrier in the metal. It's a weird shape. I'm not sure what I think of it, but I'm at least very curious to see it. I think it's one of those watches that even though I'm kind of skeptical, if it's good, it's going to be really good. It's not going to be anywhere in the middle. And I'm very curious about what's going on with Richard Mille.
Yeah.
Their booth looks like a candy store. It's very weird.
It does.
It's all bright colors. There's like pictures of lollipops and shit everywhere. It's really strange. I'm very curious to see what's going on in there. I'm sure it's nothing good, but you know, no, no, just kidding. I'm curious to check them out, and yeah, just the independents are always fun. It's always good to walk
the
around.
The independents is like you'll see somebody like, wow, like I didn't know that was a thing, you know, and that's the beauty of the independents for sure. But I think overall it's been a commercial year.
Yeah.
You know, it's been like, you know, Vacheron's doing Overseas, like they'll sell those. They're doing a 56 right. Tourbillon, they'll sell that, you know. Lange, really nothing huge new, but just like nice iterations of existing movements that are pretty good.
We didn't even talk about the fact it's the 25th anniversary of the Lange 1.
Indeed it is.
And they've got a 25th anniversary limited edition that is really nice.
Yeah.
It's a
nice Lange 1. You know, I mean, I think I'd like to see a little bit more for the 25th anniversary. I think we probably will.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, I mean, everything Lange does is nice, you know, and there's almost no other brand that I can say that about, you know.
It's fair. Cool. Well, thanks for circling up, guys. I know we've got a lot to do, stories to go write, dinners to go attend, and social media to go produce. So we're going to go do that, and we'll leave you here for today. But make sure to come back tomorrow. We'll have another dispatch. We're going to be doing this Tuesday and Wednesday as well. And Wednesday we'll do a little wrap up of kind of the best of SIHH 2019 before we all hop back on planes back to the States. So thanks for listening. Thanks guys for being here, and we'll see everybody tomorrow.